Hey gang, welcome to Dateline Louisiana, a provocative look at the deepest of the deep southern states. Thoughts that are informative, candid, humorous, and sometimes controversial about life in one of the most interesting and rabble-rousing states in the nation. Here are your hosts, Ronna Gray and Jim Brown.
Hey, welcome to DatelineLouisiana.com. I'm here with my co-host, Ronna Gray. Ronna, good day today. Glad you and I are here. And I'm 83, so definitely I'm glad I'm here.
I'm always glad to be here, and I'm really looking forward to today's show and hearing what you have to say about something upcoming in your life.
Well, yes, I've enjoyed talking about this. I'm kind of struggling and exploring is what I'm doing. I don't have any set views, but I have, as your listeners are listening to this, I'm either just about to leave or should be in Jerusalem, and I'm making a quest to go to Jerusalem, and I'm not going as a tourist. I haven't had a lot of ideas to do it, and I give you a little idea of why I'm doing so. I have known a very prominent Jewish figure, author, Pulitzer Prize winner named Elie Wiesel. He wrote a marvelous book called Night about his experience of being a Holocaust survivor when he was very young. And he's been a major focus, not just in the Jewish community, but across America and across the world, dealing with prime ministers and international scholars. How I got to know Wiesel was that our grandkids go to the same high school up in New York City, and there would be gatherings where the grandparents would be invited, and I would see him there, and we had a chance to visit there and talk about his books. He's a very prolific writer. I told him, well, maybe I'd like to publish some of his future books. We had a lot of fun jibbering back and forth. So I read a recent book where he talked about something that had puzzled me in the Old Testament when I saw it. In the book of Genesis, Ronna, very early Genesis, chapter 10, Adam is in the area there, and God says, Adam, he says, where are you? Where are you? And what I had thought initially was, well, God, who's all-knowing, ought to know where Adam is. You know, he's not hiding out behind a tree from the good Lord. And that puzzled me. And I explored this with Wiesel, and I said, you know, tell me about Genesis, and what is God saying when he says, where are you? And he said, and that the term in the Aramaic is ayika, ayika, where are you? And he said, well, his interpretation is, yes, God's all-knowing. He's not asking Adam, hey, where are you hiding? Where you are? He's saying, where are you in your life? You know, what are your priorities? What is your spiritual feelings? What do you think is really all that important to you? And I just thought that was a marvelous expression. And I thought about that, and I read more about some of the ideas behind laying out priorities. And Ron, I'm not young like you are. I'm 83 years old, and I've got a number of good years left. But the fact remains that the question, where are you, has become very important to me. And I would tell our listeners, you know, we're not a religious show. Ronna, you and I have talked before that you're an Episcopal and was raised in the Episcopal Church up in around Macomb, Mississippi, where both your mother and father were eulogized and buried in their fashion.
Right, our church was in Magnolia, but we are a sister church of the one in Macomb where your wife attended.
That's right. Same pastor, I believe.
Yes, same priest. And we have joint services all the time. We're just two faces of the same church, really.
Very much so. So I'm not an Episcopal. My wife, I was married in the Episcopal Church and have known the bishops and a number of prominent people in the Episcopal Church for some time. So my leanings are there, although I consider myself a questioning Christian. You know, I'm not 100% sure of the specifics I have in a faith, but I do have a faith. And so when I saw the Wiesel commentary, I said, well, I'd like to explore a little bit more. I'd like to go to Jerusalem. Let's go to the point of beginnings, the central location of the foundation of not just Christianity, but Judaism, Islam, all came out of Jerusalem. And I'd never been to Jerusalem, and I'm not sure if I'd ever have a chance as I get a little older. So, I came across a marvelous fellow who's the dean of the Washington Cathedral up in Washington, D.C., where our presidents are buried and funerals take place. And I expressed this to him. I'd met him for over several summers, got to know him. He's a minister that preaches up in a summer place we have up in the North Carolina mountains that, Ronna, you've been to.
Mm-hmm.
Have a great little Episcopal church there. And I explored with him my interest. And he said, well, Jim, let me contact the St. George College. St. George College is not a university, but it's kind of a retreat for people that want to come who are Episcopal, who want to come to the Holy Land, and you can stay there. And so I started to stay in one of the big shot hotels, but I thought it was marvelous to stay at this retreat hotel. And that was my location. I haven't left yet. I'm about to leave in a couple of days, depending on when you folks are listening to this podcast. But I'm going to stay at St. George's Cathedral. And I'm not going as a tourist. Ronna, I'm not going to see the sites or to see all the various historical markers or locations. I have a very specific agenda because I want to go to get a little better sense of where I am spiritually. And if I start with Christianity, I've just decided the demarcation line, the place to begin, is the baptism by John the Baptist of Jesus Christ. I think that's where that's where Christ's preaching and being some very, very exceptional person began when he was baptized. So I want to go to the Jordan River. And I've spotted right in Jordan, actually, you've got Jordan on one side and Israel on the other side. They tell me that there's only about 10 yards of water that separate the two. And there's guards at both sides with machine guns.
Oh, wow.
the Jordanians and the Israeli soldiers. So I want to go to the Jordan River. I want to see where it all began, in my opinion. Maybe it began at the birth in Bethlehem, but we don't know much about Jesus' life for the first 30 years of his life.
Right.
And so I say it began when he was baptized. And then I want to go to where the Sermon on the Mount took place. I just can't think of a more compelling, dramatic, philosophical treatise on how we should live than the Sermon on the Mount. And Christ gave the Sermon on the Mount at a location that is somewhat south of Jerusalem, and I want to go to that site. I want to see the fields. I want to see where the thousands of people came to hear him speak. And I just don't know about these miracles. I got thinking, well, now if there's 5,000 people coming to hear Christ speak out in the hither lands where they walk several hours, and then it becomes noon, well, you want to have a break and have lunch. Well, 5,000 people didn't walk all the way out there, and none of them bringing food. I mean, you're going to pack a lunch. Chris, our producer, wouldn't he, right? You wouldn't go walk hours out if you didn't bring a lunch, would you?
I meal prep every Sunday.
Right. So, if you take 5,000 people, invariably there's younger kids that got lost or some people that didn't bring lunch. And I just thought it made sense for Christ to say, look, let's share. We can feed the 5,000 by taking your bread and breaking it and sharing it with everyone, and then everybody can eat. Just give a little, share a little. That makes sense. Well, that's just a beautiful example of something very special that maybe could be considered a miracle. But so you might give an answer. You can analyze all these miracles that take place, and that's not my focus. I'm not that. That's more studying. I can study that myself when I get back. So, and then after those two locations, then of course you come back to the final days of Christ, where first of all, he was betrayed in the Garden of Gethsemane, and by betrayed there by one of his 12 disciples, by Judas, and then the walk up the Villa Dolorosa, which is the path that Jesus took when he carried his pass up towards his crucifixion. About 600 yards, I'm told it is. And so I want to explore that. There are some stops that have some special significance along the way. The church, there is two churches I want to stop at. The Church of Ashapriya, I believe is how it's pronounced. That church is supposed to be on the spot where Jesus was crucified, supposedly, and no one knows for sure, but it's in that vicinity. Mm-hmm. And I'd love to go, I want to go visit that church. There is a small church, the Church of David, that is a very small church that has no special significance to Jesus, but the services are in Aramaic. And it's very hard to find anywhere in the world, for that matter, where there is Aramaic that's spoken. And why I think that's important, you know, when you go interpret all these biblical passages, first of all, there was an oral history for about 50 to 100 years. Then the Bible, then there was written synopsis in Aramaic, and then it went to Greek, and then it was translated into the Latin, and then into the German, then into Old English, and then on to current English, and then the King James Version. I mean, there's about 8 or 9 different changes in translations. Rana, you know, we were kids, and Chris, you remember this. They, at a birthday party, they'd put 10 of us around in a circle, and you'd tell the first little kid, hey, here's the buzzword you should pass on. And that, oh, okay. And they'd pass it
right.
All around. And by the time it got to the 10th, it wasn't the same thing at all, right? It
didn't. Telephone.
Yeah, that's right. Well, wouldn't the same thing be possibly where with all those translations, stuff got lost in the translation and things we think we know might not have been that way. So I tried to learn some Aramaic. I got on the web, got on the internet, and Chris and Rana, and pulled up some Aramaic. It is really, really hard. I mean, Greek is hard. Latin is pretty hard.
Yeah.
I took Latin, but I mean, Aramaic is something that, I mean, the numbers are letters, and the letters are numbers, and then the pronunciations. Just pull, some of you listeners out there, you ought to pull up and just put it YouTube, how do I learn Aramaic? And you'll be just dumbfounded how difficult the language is. Well, that was the language of Christ.
Right.
And so I wanted to kind of get a sense of that, and I listened to the Lord's Prayer and other things in Aramaic, and so that's why I wanted to go to that particular church. And then there's a marvelous movie, by the way, called Kingdom of Heaven. It is a very long 3-hour movie about the Crusades and the assault on Jerusalem, and a bunch of crusaders that pick up this blacksmith in France, and he decides to go along with them. One thing leads to another, and he becomes head of the whole Christian effort to take on Jerusalem. And at one point he says, I just don't feel like I've got communication with God. People tell me that they have a sign from God, but I never have. And he goes to where Jesus was crucified, and he sits there for the whole day, trying to see if there's some sign. That I'm not looking for some sign. I don't think the good Lord is going to come down with some special blessing on me. But I want to get a sense and a feel of what that was like, and just see how it affects my life. So I'm not trying to be melodramatic, and I'm not trying to be brag about how religious a guy I am. I just take this one time in my life and do some exploration and just see what comes out of the pot.
I think it sounds like a fantastic trip and experience. I have not been there either, but I remember when I went to Rome and places in Italy, when you start to see in real life the places of ancient times and stories that you've read about, it really brings it to reality. It was almost easy to imagine people like Julius Caesar existing only in books, you know. But when you then see where these things took place, I think the meaning is greatly enhanced. And I can just imagine, you know, the path of Jesus and the crucifixion is going to be very moving. And I do understand, like you said, they've, you know, he fell several times and they've marked these places so that to help people really experience that. So, you know, my advice to you is you've got to keep a journal on this trip. You've got to write down, because I think from day one till you finish this journey, it'll be a really interesting experience. I want you to tell us all about it on one of our podcasts when you come back.
Now, I've got everybody wants me to bring it a souvenir.
Oh. So,
and I'm sure there's souvenir shops all over Jerusalem.
Like at the Vatican. When I went to the Vatican, you could buy all your rosary beads, and then they go and have them blessed by the Pope.
Yeah, so, yeah.
And then deliver
so
to your hotel.
Yeah.
And then deliver to your hotel. I'm like, okay, I want to go see the room where the Pope goes in and blesses all the trinkets.
Yeah, all at the same time. Yeah.
No, I want you to go float in the Dead Sea.
Which I plan, and I didn't mention the Dead Sea. I definitely plan on floating in the Dead Sea.
I want to hear about that, because Salt Lake City, the Salt Lake's drying up. So we want you to go float in the Dead Sea. Definitely want to hear about the River Jordan, Sea of Galilee. That's all. You're right. I picture it being huge, but
it's very small. No,
it's all much smaller than what we imagine. So
no doubt. So, well, I'll certainly find something that I think is unique in terms of items to bring back that I don't buy, but have some significance of blessing. And so, so, like I say, I'm looking forward to the trip, and I'll give you a full report when I get back, and I will certainly make some notes and see if I can, what interpretation I can get on a trip like this.
Now, do you have any plans to go onto the into the West Bank, or are you going to Jericho or anything on that side? Or
not really, because it does. You know, I'm not only going to be there a week, and it doesn't really build into my agenda. Now, I've had relatives through my son-in-law that are Jewish that live in Jerusalem, and they're going to have a Shabbat dinner for me on the Friday night I'm there, which is something that
that's nice.
Yeah, that active Jewish families do every Friday night, and so I'm going to have it. This is the, of course, we're here during a holy season right now. This is the New Year during this time, the Jewish New Year. And so Rosh Hashanah is going on right now as we speak. And so I'll be there at the tail end of the religious holidays. So I'll do that. And then, like I say, I've got two different church services that I want to attend. I think I should go through the Holocaust Museum. It's supposed to be just such an unbelievable experience. And it takes 3 or 4 hours to go through
the
museum.
Yeah.
And so I do want to take that on. So when you put all that together,
that's a lot.
That's a lot I'm going to be doing, and then it's to be some.
And it's a lot to see, and then it's a lot of to think about. You know, it's a lot of emotional things you'll see, and a lot that'll be thought provoking. I'll be interested in hearing if you have the Edwin Edwards thoughts about the crucifixion that he had. Do you remember that?
Well, that was terrible
when he decided that for Jesus' crucifixion he more than likely swooned and lost consciousness and was put in the tomb. He was obviously at an exploring part of his life too, and was put in the tomb, and then he believed recovered, so that was why he was able to leave the tomb. And I don't think it took long for former Governor Edwards' Pentecostal friends to pray over him and get him back in line.
That's right.
Well,
of course, that's the Da Vinci Code. That's there is a great amount of literature over the fact that how someone could survive being crucified if they're taken down enough and they could recover. And then did Jesus go on and Mary
right,
Magdalene,
right.
And there's all kinds of theories. Of course, you can imagine how important literature within the Christian church is, and so there's thousands and thousands of books being written on every conceivable subject.
But when you hear the stories of the crucifixion, just how brutal that was, and supposedly they speared him in the sides, even, you know, as he was dying from the crucifixion, it was pretty far-fetched to imagine someone survives anything like that.
And I even read about why they would take vinegar and kind of put in his mouth. Well, apparently that's not a bad thing. That heightens that, number one, the vinegar takes away a little bit of the pain, and number two, it brings his demise along much quicker. The vinegar does. So if you feel sorry for someone and want to help them, then you give them some vinegar. You know? So I didn't realize that. So, and you're right about the crucifixions by the thousands and thousands and thousands. And most people would not come down, you know.
No.
Pilate gave permission to one of Christ's supporters to take him down right after he supposedly passed away. But most people are left just to rot on there as a sign to other people where you don't challenge challenge Rome, you
right.
know, take on the government. So
the Garden of Gethsemane's always been kind of a magical place too. You have any idea the size?
Not that big.
Yeah, I think smaller than I
yeah, like a small, like you, a very small park. You know, it would be you know, 1/10 of a block or something like that. It was not big at all, from what I could tell.
Well, of course, it's portrayed in art as always being, you know, a place where they went and prayed and talked, he and the disciples, which is how Judas knew where to betray him, where he would be and could be found. But it's always just this little, in art, you know, just a little setting. What I'm envious of is to put all this in perspective. You'll be able to put this in perspective of all these places that we've heard about our entire lives. What are they really like?
Well, a lot of it's been commercialized, like I was saying, build up. It's not like there's any greenery or anything like that. And the churches are, you know, so it's, you can imagine the tourist attractions or something like that. So it's certainly not the same as it was 50 years ago, let alone 2,000 years ago.
If you decide to get baptized there, which we certainly would understand if you do, there's probably going to be a little number that you pull, and like at Baskin-Robbins, and you go get in line.
Ron, we look up here as the sky's opening up, and you know, get a number at Baskin-Robbins.
Get a number. At the Jordan River. Get a number. You said it's been commercialized, so I'm thinking.
Doubt. So, well, I'll keep you folks updated.
It sounds like a wonderful trip, really.
Well, I'm looking forward to it, and I'll give you a full report when I get back, and you can go to my website to see some photographs, pictures I've taken. I'm taking a video camera. I'm taking a backup camera in case something happens to my camera. I'm really packed well. I've got I want to take a walking stick because you're walking over some rough terrain, but
right.
you can't get a walking stick on the plane, so I've got one that comes
telescopes,
apart.
Telescopes, yeah, right.
Three pieces, you know, so I take it apart. And you say this, it's very hot over there, so you want to drink a lot of fluids. Well, I've got a 64-inch water bottle that's rubberized that collapses.
Oh, good.
And you can put it around it, and then you can open it up. You can't put a huge water bottle in your bag and expect to carry anything over there. So I've got a lot of little things like that, you know, to kind of help me along. And a full-brimmed hat, not just a baseball hat, and even an umbrella because the sun gets pretty pretty brutal. So I've got my whole list to pack. So, Rana, if you want to come over and help me pack, I've got a lot of stuff to take over there. I want to take a few of my books, you know, to give as gifts to some of the folks over there.
Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah, so I've got a full agenda of suitcase material to put together. So.
Well, I can't wait to hear about it. And Chris, you start making up your questions you'll have for him when he gets back, because we're going to really make him tell us all about it.
Sounds great.
Well, I definitely will. So, well, folks, thanks for listening today. Our website's datelinelouisiana.com. You can go to ronagray.com or jimbrownla.com to check out our various writings. And like I say, on my website, I'll put a lot of photographs of the trip and a lot of writings on there for you also. Hey, thanks for listening today. Chris O'Loughlin's been our producer who's put the show together. You folks have a good week. We'll talk to you soon. Take care.
Thanks for listening to Dateline Louisiana with Jim Brown and Ronna Gray. To subscribe to this podcast or contact Jim or Ronna, visit datelinelouisiana.com. We hope you'll join us again next week for more news and reflections from the Bayou State.